E3 2019 wrap-up, and more coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hey, Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is The Latest in Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, hit that subscribe and follow button right now so that you don't miss out on the latest episode. And hold off on that like button if you're watching the video until you get to a section of the show that you actually like. And if you're listening on iTunes or Google, be sure to go and leave us a review as well. It would be greatly appreciated. Coming up on today's show, we got, well, ranking the E3 conferences and seeing how that all managed to sort itself out, being that today's last day. We'll also be taking a look at Halo Infinite showing coming next year at E3 2020. We'll also be looking at Google Chrome 76 beta making it harder to use Flash and easier to dodge paywalls, and maybe a little bit of news that I have coming up regarding that. Also, we'll be taking a look at, in terms of gadgets, a new Switch Joy-Con replacements are wide enough for bigger hands, and Google Game Builder letting anyone create 3D games. We'll also be taking a look at Epic Games snatching up social app House Party for some odd reason. And finally, we'll be taking a look at Nintendo's statement that they will be, quote, evaluating streaming. So before we can get to that, Octavius just keeps randomly pressing buttons now. He always scares me every single time he presses that button. Well, did you know that Miller Lite created a beer can game controller? Well, it's true. Dubbed Cantroller, you can store liquid or beer inside the can, refrigerate it, and still use a controller just fine. It debuted at E3 2019 in limited quantities as a giveaway, but they do plan on making several hundred more. I'm not kidding you. This is by far... It made headlines just because it was such an oddity. But they only made 200 Cantrollers for launch, but plan on producing several hundred more. It also looks like it connects to computers and gaming consoles via Bluetooth and is equipped with rechargeable batteries. And get this, it's even fine to be refrigerated. Nope, not making this up. I'll have a link for this in the show notes for you guys. Moving right along to today in tech history. Today is June 13th, 2019. On this day in history, in 1983, the NASA space probe Pioneer 10 crosses the orbit of Neptune, becoming the first man-made object to leave the solar system. It was launched on March 2nd, 1972, toward the red star Aldebaran, I guess, which forms the eye of the constellation Taurus. The last contact with Pioneer 10 was on January 23rd, 2003. Also, on this day in 1993, a joint venture to combine computing and television was announced between Time Warner Inc., Microsoft Corp., and Telecommunications Inc. They designed it as a way to combine the worlds of computing and television and perhaps shape of how much popular culture is delivered. The development of interactive television software, which would allow consumers to shop, bank, and use the World Wide Web via their home television sets complete with keyboard and mouse, well, seemed to be the next route in taking technology to the home and making it more accessible and useful there. Although seeing as how that kind of fizzled out a little bit more than a decade and a half later, and now here we are today. Well, after that, I'm kind of glad it didn't work out because, oh my goodness. I mean, I understand the technology behind it, why it was cool and everything, but I just don't like the way that it... Big TV screen, clunky keyboard, wireless mouse, what? No, just let me tap and swipe. Thank you, Steve Jobs. That's all I'm going to say about that. Thank you, Steve Jobs. And with that out of the way, let's get on to today's feature story. All right, so today was the final day at E3. It's all done, it's all wrapped up, and if there's any after parties going on, they're probably going on. Speaking of which, I would love not the parties, E3, the conference itself. I would love to go next year. I'm gonna make that a goal. Fingers crossed. I really want to go, and then I can actually show you guys how cool it is at E3. And if you have gone to E3, hey, be sure to let us know. We would love to find out just how fun or boring it is, and why there's so many PCs instead of consoles. I don't know. I think the general takeaway from E3 this year is that it was a little bit of an in-between year, meh for a couple of games and awesome for a couple more games, although some of those awesome game announcements could have used a little bit more meat, you know? Meat? But sorry, I didn't mean to offend any non-meat eating individuals. Any leaves. There we go, that's what I'll say. To said substance of worth. So with that being said, E3 isn't just about what games are announced, it's about how they're announced. Every year, the major players, except for Sony, in this case this year, get up on a respective stage and bellow out the loudest or creatively the best, and obviously see who can make the best presentation. In 2019 was no exception. IGN watched them all with bated breath, and while some of them had some impressive games to show and got everybody all excited about next year and changes of upcoming games and gaming related stuff, here's how IGN at least thought the major conferences ranked from most exciting to least. So if you're interested, the article to today's show can be found at technewsgadget.net. Matter of fact, all the articles that we cover today can be found there, as well as the controller from Miller Lite. Sorry, I'm just still laughing over it. So obviously the best one so far, according to IGN, was Nintendo Direct. That came out Tuesday, June 11th. How do you get gamers to swallow the bitter pill of a delay until March 2020 for Animal Crossing New Horizons? How about announcing that you're working on a follow-up to the new Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild sequel? Well, that'll do it. Nintendo's Direct hit almost all the right notes with its steady stream of announcements, updated looks, and release dates. And boy, were there ever release dates. There's a Switch remake of The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, Cadence of Hyrule featuring The Legend of Zelda, No More Heroes 3, remake of Panzer Dragoon, Daemon X Machina, Contra Rogue Corps, Dark Crystal strategy game from Netflix called Age of Resistance Tactics due sometimes this year, and it pairs nicely with Empire of Sin, which is an XCOM-style gangster game from John Romero, due out next year, and Luigi's Mansion 3, but still didn't scare out a release date out of all of that. Also saw a long list of crowd-pleasing ports, headlined by The Witcher 3, Wild Hunt Complete Edition, Resident Evil 5 and 6, Dragon Quest 9S Definitive Edition, Spyro the Dragon Trilogy, Ni No Kuni, as well as The Sinking City, Alien Isolation, and Super Lucky's Tale, rounding out the chance to live again. Finally, there was a nice addition, surprise, surprise, to Super Smash Bros. Ultimate lineup when Banjo and Kazooie crossed first-party platform lines as a DLC. So, runner-up to that, at least according to IGN, was the Microsoft conference that was held on Sunday. With no Sony to contend with this year, it was Microsoft's E3 to lose, but it was neither a resounding victory nor a failure, just kind of the middle-of-the-road performance with a few high notes that kept it from getting dull in its long 90-minute runtime. So, obviously they dropped news about the new Elite controller, glimpse at a new Xbox. They also brought out Halo Infinite, Gears 5, Cyberpunk 2077, Borderlands 3, Dying Light 2, and the Elden Ring. They also got to take a look at The Outer Worlds, Bleeding Edge, Psychonauts 2, and, well, more Game Pass news there as well for Xbox and PC gamers. So, yeah, third place, I guess, goes to Ubisoft, who held their conference on Monday, June 10th. So they unveiled the wildly ambitious Watch Dogs Legion, as well as Ghost Recon Breakpoint. So, yeah, I guess, let's see, Rainbow Six Quarantine, Shadows of the Hitokori expansion for Honor. Let's see, Roller Champions, Adventure Time characters joining Brawlhalla, Just Dance 2020 coming to the Wii for some reason, and a free weekend for The Division 2 that's going to be happening right now-ish. And I guess the Breath of the Wild inspired gods and monsters, which looks like something we should all be keeping both eyes on, came awfully close to unseating Bam Bam from his lazy throne. And a premium subscription to Uplay Plus will let you play any of these new games for $15 a month, which is an awfully good deal if you think of it as a month-to-month rental service. In fourth place, they put Bethesda, which had their conference on Sunday, June 9th. Yeah, it was interesting. They covered, let's see, Doom Eternal, Wolfenstein Youngblood, Ghostwire Tokyo, Dishonored. All four of them looked fantastic and made the slow build worthwhile, but in order to reach them, we had to endure some obligatory updates from Fallout 76, and oh my goodness, poke my eyeballs out now. I liked the part where they ran around on the stage saying, "Guys, we did it. We finally did it. We added Battle Royale to Fallout 76. And everybody just went, "Huh? I thought that... What? What? And then he went, "Bleh." So that's what they thought about that. At least people in the audience. I don't know what you guys thought. Obviously, let me know down in the comments section. Let's see. They also announced Elder Scrolls Online with a new expansion. There was also an announcement for Elder Scrolls Blades coming to Nintendo Switch, which would have been more exciting if it were a good game when it launched on mobile devices, and a reboot of Commander Keen. I know for a fact that Angry Joe isn't too happy about that. He's poking his eye out too. I'm trying to get my eyeball back. It's not really working out. And then fifth place was the EA live stream that was held on Saturday. Now, obviously, they started strong. They had this great announcement, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. And that was about it. After that, we got to take a look at Madden 20, FIFA 20, a preview of Apex Legends Season 2 content, a set of incoming Battlefield 5 maps, The Sim 4's 7th expansion. But, well, they had no announcements about Anthem. They had nothing about Dragon Age Dreadwolf Rises or whatever it might wind up being called. But... Then they decided to talk about three new original games called Lost in Random and, let's see, an action RPG called Rust Hearts and something about working together from Hazelight Studios. None of them was shown beyond concept art, though. And finally, bringing up the rear was Square Enix conference that was held on Monday. The new look at Final Fantasy VII gameplay definitely turned heads, but a disappointing reveal of Marvel's Avengers that showed next to no gameplay went over like a lead balloon and left people wondering what kind of game this would be when it comes out next year in May. The announcement trailer for Outriders, a co-op shooter from People Can Fly, seemed interesting, but once again, no gameplay was shown. There was also a third game coming from Tokyo RPG Factory called Oninaki and a top-down racing game called Circuit Superstars. Outside of that was slim pickings. Final Fantasy VIII Remaster, a remake of Romancing Saga 3, a port of the Japanese Vita game Saga Scarlet Grace, and a remaster of The Last Remnant that's out currently. The show ended rather abruptly and gave the impression that it really didn't have a lot of material to justify itself. Although, here's the thing about the Marvel Avengers game. I watched it and I was like, this isn't the original cast. This has nothing to do with anything. And then they had no gameplay in any of it. But I liked the trailer. Probably the reason why I liked the Star Wars more was because when it dropped, they dropped the trailer, which looked great. And then they dropped 15 minutes of gameplay, which actually showed you running around as a character doing the moves that you saw from the trailer. So if the Marvel's Avengers trailer dropped like that in addition to like a gameplay and showed some gameplay during it instead of like just like a story mission or an intro mission, probably would have gotten a little bit more meat to it. Sorry, I just made... I can't. Okay, you know what? I like eating McDonald's from time to time. Don't judge. You do too. And if you don't go for the burgers, you go for the fries. Admit it, okay? Even if you're vegan hungry, you're stomping out potatoes by munching on them fries. So, what do you guys think of the conference? What one was your favorite? What are you hoping for next year? Well, let us know down in the comment section. I'd love to hear what you guys think, but be that as it may, we gotta move on to the rest of the stories. Okay, so you saw the new Halo Infinite trailer, right? Called Discover Hope. It confirmed that it will be a launch title for Project Scarlet next year in 2020, but there was no gameplay shown, and we really don't know much more about it. So when will we learn more about Microsoft's much-anticipated Xbox and PC game? Probably not soon. You see, in a blog post, Halo Infinite studio head Chris Lee said that 2020's E3 will be a, quote, big moment for Halo Infinite. You should expect Microsoft to keep quiet about it until then, which keeps in line with a recent comment about Halo Infinite going dark. As for what's next, E3 2020 will be a big moment for Halo Infinite. Until we reach that destination, we'll continue to embrace the mystery and wonder of Halo and the endless opportunity and potential of this engine, this hardware, and most of all, this team. Lee added that it has been incredibly challenging to develop Halo Infinite, so he and the team were excited to finally share most of it at E3 this week. So, Halo Infinite launches next year in 2020, but it's not clear if this means the full Halo Infinite release or only part of the game's public beta. In his blog post, Lee reaffirmed that Microsoft still plans to launch a pre-release beta or flight for Infinite. We still intend to support an early flighting program that will give you a way to play the game and provide feedback that will directly impact decisions we make for launch and into the future. So if you're interested, yes, there's a way that you can sign up. You can sign up for Microsoft's Halo Insider program for a chance to get into the Halo Infinite beta. Halo Infinite will release on Project Scarlet, as well as all of the Xbox One family of consoles, and it's also coming to PC. While Halo Infinite might not release until 2020, Microsoft plans to start the first beta test for Halo Reach on PC sometime in June. In other news, Microsoft recently announced the pricing details for Halo, the Master Chief Collection, on PC, if you are so inclined. All right, well, Google Chrome, new update. The 76 beta update makes it harder to use Flash, surprise, surprise, and easier to dodge paywalls. And here's the best part of it, publishers aren't going to be happy about this one. And Google's Chrome's last big feature was dark mode in 73 and 74, and version 75 didn't bring much of note, but Chrome 76 in beta today has some sneaky features you might want to know about. While Adobe Flash won't truly die until 2020 and has been blocked by every major browser in one way or another for several years by now, Chrome 76 is taking it one step further. Not only are individual Flash items blocked by default, but now the entire browser feature is off by default as well. Now, if you opt into the beta and head over to the Chrome settings content slash Flash, you should see the little setting ask first flipped off instead of on. Another somewhat covert leak, Google Chrome developer Paul Irish says that websites will no longer be able to detect when your Chrome browser is in incognito mode. That's going to be a pain for publishers like the New York Times, which uses those detection schemes to keep you from reading an infinite number of free stories and sear you into paying for a subscription. There's also an intriguing enhancement for dark mode itself. Now web developers can program their sites to automatically serve up a dark version of their website when it sees your dark mode browser, seemingly just by adding a little bit of extra code. The stable, non-beta release of Chrome 76 is tentatively scheduled for July 30th. Obviously, they have a listing on Google Chromium's blog post about that. Some, being that it's in beta, things are probably going to break and things might be due to change, but this is basically mostly set in stone. Some things could change, but I wanted to mention that so that I could segue into, well, speak a little bit about what's going on with Tech News Gadget behind the scenes. So I got an announcement. I tried to kickstart a program. Didn't really work out the way I'd hoped it to. I don't know. I'm probably jumping too far ahead of myself. It seems to be a typical problem of mine. Okay, this takes me back to my lemonade stand days back when I was a teenager, young teenager. I'm not anymore, can't you tell? But when I was a young teenager, I had a lemonade stand. And I got this great idea. Well, why don't we expand our lemonade stands to a couple other stands? Well, good help is hard to find, especially when your friends just want to play during the summer and they don't want to sit for an entire afternoon in the hot sun by a busy road selling lemonade. And I told them you'd get a cut of the money It just never did work out. And not even my siblings wanted to do it. So yeah, that idea crashed and burned. I jumped too far ahead. I tried franchising my business. But it seemed to be an ongoing trend with me here, at least. So I wanted to say that, with the paywall that you guys might have been noticing on the site currently on Tech News Gadget, and if you hadn't noticed already, well, good. You won't notice at all. But if you've been around for a while, you'll notice that in order to read the articles, you needed to sign up. I'm actually thinking of switching off that feature. I'm thinking of providing the content for free, slapping some ads around it to help support the show and the live stream when I hope to get that back online. News coming with that shortly, along with YouTube videos and everything else. Essentially, I just want to push out as much free content and value as I can. And then on the other side, I'm planning on creating a community where all of us can hang out. And I got some ideas with that, but being that I haven't nailed it down yet, that's all I can say at this point. But the paywall idea thing will be going away. Just expect a little bit more ads on the site. Don't worry, it's not going to be intrusive. It's just, you know, the site's got to pay for itself. Man's got to eat. No, I don't need to eat. I do this as a side hobby. This isn't my full-time gig. But I would like this site to obviously grow, to see more people reading it, to see more people enjoying it. By the way, if you're enjoying it, hit that like button down below. Leave a review out on iTunes. Tell a friend. It'd be greatly, greatly appreciated. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. So be that as it may, we'll have to see how Chrome 76 finishes rolling out. I love how every single time Adobe Flash is mentioned, it's now like, we're killing it. Just put a fork in it. We're done. It's a long time in coming, but I'm going to miss Flash. I don't know. All right, moving on to some gadget news. Well, there are some new Switch Joy-Con replacements that will give you that extra wide grip. Now, a hardware maker, Hori, will release a pair of Joy-Con replacement controllers for Nintendo Switch later this year that will offer players a big honkin' wide version of the console when played in portable mode. And we actually have a picture right here on the screen how it looks like. It just... If you're not watching the video of this, you're really missing out. YouTube.com/TechNewsGadget. Called the Grip Controllers, Hori's Joy-Con replacements will be released this fall alongside mech action game Daemon X Machina, hence the branded X buttons on the right controller. It's hilarious. It has a few nice perks as well. A cross-pad style directional pad, extra-large analog controllers, and turbo buttons that fire 5, 10, or 20 times per second. The third-party controllers look suited for Nintendo Switch owners with big hands who want to play shooters or other action-focused games on the go. Now, there are a couple downsides. They're only usable in portable mode, and there is no gyro sensor, no HD rumble, no near-field communication NFC functions, and no motion IR camera in the controller. They do plan on shipping this September in Japan, and it will cost 4,980 yen, which converts to about $45 US. So if you're interested, well, there you go. And you just have to look into figuring out how to pre-order and purchase it. Hopefully it'll be available elsewhere, maybe at a later date, or it's just going to be Japan exclusive only. Although I don't see how that's a problem in Japan. I was going to make a really funny joke right there, but I think I'll just leave that unspoken before I get myself in trouble. No, it's not my fault, okay? See, I crack jokes because I have to sit at work all day and listen to my coworkers talk to me, and then they expect me to say something, and I usually jump in and I say something stupid, and it's usually stupider than what they said, and then everybody's trying to out-stupid each other, and it's just a never-ending thing until we finally just leave for the day. So, yeah, it's just the way the cookie crumbles, and I'm done using that because I used that phrase yesterday. I'm done. Okay, so moving on to some gaming news, Google's Game Builder lets anyone create 3D games in a Minecraft-like UI. Interesting. Area 120 is Google's workshop for experimental projects, and its latest prototype is Game Builder. The Mac and Windows app is a sandbox for people without programming or artistic experience to create games in a familiar Minecraft-esque environment. According to Google, Game Builder is for those that have an idea for a video game, but have no experience whatsoever. It's particularly catered for existing gamers that are already familiar with Minecraft's drag-and-drop world building. It could be a first-person action game starring a snail on the slow run from the law, or a multiplayer game featuring only pugs. There's only one problem. You've never built a game before, you don't know how to program, you don't know any 3D artists, and every tool you find won't let you collaborate with friends. So Game Builder is featuring a card-based visual programming system for building 3D levels that abstracts coding through if-then statements, which is really basic way of doing it, but if then statements, you can start layering them and it gets complex after that, and if you know what you're doing, you can actually have fun with it. However, those with experience can live code games using JavaScript. Drag and drop cards to answer questions such as how do I move. You can make moving platforms, scoreboards, healing potions, drivable cars, and more. Pretty interesting. Meanwhile, graphics for characters and the environment can be found and imported from Poly, Google's open library of free VR and AR assets. There are thousands of 3D models created by the community using Tilt Brush and Blocks. So, let's see. If you are interested, Google Game Builder is available for free on Steam for Mac and Windows starting today. So, definitely looking very interesting. If you guys have fun coding, you enjoy game building, you enjoy programming to a certain extent, hey, jump in, have some fun. This looks pretty good. And Google, great job. All right, moving on to some more news. Well, Epic Games decide to snatch up social app House Party for some odd reason. The renaissance of mobile room-based video chat applications has largely passed, with even Facebook deciding their clone didn't need to stick around. One of the original players, House Party, has managed to continue running. In fact, today, the app was acquired by video game giant Epic Games. House Party is a synchronous social platform that lets you connect face-to-face with the people you care about most. The team wrote in a blog post, by teaming up with Epic, creator of Fortnite and Unreal Engine, we'll be able to help even more people connect with their friends, families, and peers. The post confirmed that there won't be any immediate changes. The House Party and accounts will not be merged with Epic Games accounts. Now, the announcement was light on details about exactly why Epic was interested in it. Epic's smash hit game Fortnite has become a massive social space for a young audience, so perhaps the company is looking to improve on that aspect of the game? Epic is also in the midst of building an ecosystem around the newly released Epic Game Store, and some of its competitors like Steam and Discord already have integrated chat rooms, but being that it's too early to tell, not exactly sure what's going to go on, but quite interesting. And getting on to our final news of today, according to, well, Nintendo's statement at least, well, they're evaluating streaming for some odd reason. Yay! Well, you want to know why? Because game streaming loomed large as the biggest story of E3. Between Google Stadia news late last week, Microsoft's Game Pass additions, and a Ubisoft announcement, and even a presence of Netflix, well, the writing is clearly on the wall. Nintendo, of course, didn't want to be left out, but they've been left out kind of deliberately, or have they? No real surprise there. The gaming company has always marched to the beat of its own drum, bucking larger industry trends in favor of its own singular vision. The approach has sometimes been to its detriment, as is the case with its longtime heel dragging on mobile, but has largely resulted in a number of the industry's most beloved platforms, titles, and IP. Now, given the company's rich and storied gaming history, a Netflix-style approach to content makes a lot of sense for a company like Nintendo, and certainly the notion of paying $10 a month for access to 30 years of Mario, Zelda, and the like doesn't seem like much of a stretch. They got a lot to offer. Though for Nintendo, much of the calculation no doubt comes down to whether or not gamers are willing to continue to pay for downloads. In an interview with TechCrunch this week on the show floor, Nintendo of America executive Charlie Scabetta said the concept is one the company has been considering. Streaming is certainly interesting technology. Nintendo is keeping a close eye on it, and we're evaluating it. We don't have anything to announce right now in terms of adopting that technology. For us, it's still physical, and it's digital downloads through our eShop. The sentiment echoes similar statements made by new Nintendo of America chief Doug Bowser, who told The Hollywood Reporter, "We're always interested in how various new tech can enable different ways to play games." So might that be that little lead-in that might lead to something down the road? I don't know. We'll find out. And with that, that wraps up this episode of The Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday, although tomorrow, I'm going to let you know, it's probably going to be a Friday special edition. And then next week, I am on vacation for the entire week, but after that, we should be back to normal running order, which means episodes every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, both on YouTube and on the podcast and at technewsgadget.net. Now, Latest in Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to let us know by clicking that like button and leaving a comment. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss out on the next episode. I'm your host, Taylor American. Remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.